All right. I hope that people received the handout sheet when you came in. If anyone did not receive the sheet, just raise your hand and maybe we can get an usher to go along. It'll say Shmirat HaLashon on the top, guarding the tongue. And I know we have some guests, but one of the areas of endeavor that our community has been focused on and will continue to focus on is how to develop skills around dialogue and civility, how to talk to one another in respectful manners while sharing our own truth. And so what we'll be doing today in a few minutes is looking at some of the teachings of the Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Israel Meir Kagan, a 19th century scholar who gave us a very strong Jewish foundation around the rules and processes of proper speech. But before we do that, because ultimately our job as a community is to figure out what speaks to us, I want to take a moment and ask those of us who are here, why is proper speech even important? Why does civility matter? Why does dialogue form an important part of culture? Maybe it doesn't. So how come it matters? It's how you communicate, right? But as we've seen, right, in the public sphere, there's a lot of different ways to communicate. So Some people even communicate when they communicate. Wonderful. Senator. So Senator Hayward brings up the point for us that we are all sharpened when we converse about ideas one with another, when there are people who have different perspectives on than our own, and that without civility, it's very hard even to hear those other concepts or let your own be sharpened. Fantastic. So if we want the best outcomes from a public policy perspective, we need to be able to hear, listen, and get smarter. Wonderful. Other reasons why civility matters. Cantor. Beautiful. There's a little bit of a tit for tat here. Humans return the treatment they receive to others. And love tends to call forth a reaction of love. Hatred tends to call out a reaction of hatred. And sarcasm, says this New York rabbi, tends to call out sarcasm in its turn. So we get what we give in this world to some way. Beautiful. Phil. I love that. Civility is the foundation of self-respect. We think if we get really apoplectic listening to somebody with whom we don't agree, sometimes that we can just plow into them. But ultimately, how we respond to others is a statement of how we view ourselves. And respecting ourselves means that we will treat others with dignity because we are people ourselves of dignity, possessed of that. Beautiful.
Without the lines of communication. Without the lines of communication, then the unknown can fester in a negative way.
Oh, isn't this true, right? Without open communication, the unspoken, the unknown things which are bugging somebody can fester and they can get worse. And certainly in all our personal relationships, we know sometimes it's really hard to say what is bothering us or to say it in a way that can be heard. and then we make mountains out of molehills. So there's some damage control that civility can help us with. It can keep molehills as molehills and not as mountains. Gorgeous. You can't have common ground if you don't know what the ground is. This to me is so important. We live, as we all know, in a very polarized period of time. And what polarization means is that we can't actually see what we share in common as easily as we can see what our differences are. And if we don't get to explore that, we don't even know whether the differences are greater than the commonalities, and we just tend to assume that they are. Wonderful. Really. Beautiful. If we're not able to self-regulate, our bodies get adrenalized, our emotions take over, and we have a lot of science that shows we cannot understand or hear that information. So being able to self-regulate actually will make us smarter because we'll know what's coming at us on the environment and be able to appropriately respond. Fantastic. Pretty good, we all get an A for that. I wanna look at some other concepts that include ours, but also talk about, in part, who a human being is supposed to be. And I wanna preface this by telling you a little bit about the Chofetz Chaim, because the Chofetz Chaim was not only one of the greatest traditional Jewish scholars of the 19th century, he was a very humble man, self-effacing. Many different stories are told about him. Stories told about him on a train ride, and a farmer is sitting next to this guy and prattles for hours about farmland and all sorts of other things. And at the end, as they get to the station in Radin, everyone is lined up outside. There's this huge mob, and they all want to know what. The farmer wants to know, what's this all about? And someone on the platform says, we're all here to see the Chofetz Chaim, one of the greatest scholars of all time. And the farmer says, oh my God, I got to meet this guy. I want to be able to tell my family I met him. Where was he sitting on the train? And they look at him and say, you crazy? You were sitting next to him the whole time. And he goes back to the Chofetz Chaim and he falls on his knees and beats his chest and says, I'm so sorry, I didn't know you were the Chofetz Chaim, or I wouldn't have wasted your time talking about unimportant things. I feel so bad. And the Chofetz Chaim looked at him and said, are you kidding? That's one of the best conversations I've had in years. Normally, when I speak to someone, they're always asking me about Lashon Hara, or speaking Lashon Hara, and I have to get up and leave or try to change the topic. This was a wonderful conversation. And what that tells us is something very beautiful about the Chofetz Chaim and his ability to connect with people of all different sorts, which I think is very wonderful. One other story, just to give us a sense of who this person was, sort of as his bona fides for why we should listen to some of it. There was a court case, and the Chofetz Chaim was being called as a witness. And the defense lawyer is presenting him and says, this is the great Chofetz Chaim. And the judge says, what do I know him from? Why should I listen to him? And the judge says, one time a man gave him a letter, or a man was going to the town where the Chofetz Chaim's letter was to be delivered and said he would bring it there for free. And the Chofetz Chaim said, okay, but let me take the stamp off the envelope and rip it up so that the post office doesn't lose any money. And the judge looked at the defending attorney and said, do you expect me to believe that story?
And the lawyer said, I don't know whether that story happened or not, but I'll tell you this. They don't tell stories like that about you or me, but they do tell them about the Chofetz Chaim. In other words, how we are able to engage with one another develops a reputation and things are told. So the Chofetz Chaim wrote two major works about proper speech. The first one is where he gets his name from, Chofetz Chaim, the one who loves life and chooses life. And that's a book of law, Jewish law. The other book, and we'll be looking at a little bit of it, Shmirat HaLashon, is a book of the ethics of speech. And let's take a look and see what some of his concerns are, knowing that all of the language and the way that rituals and religions are formed are helping us heighten our attention. So let's read first idea. Do I have someone with a really loud voice? Okay, Rabbi, that's you. It's known that a person possesses 248 spiritual limbs and 365 spiritual tendons, and that each of these is garbed in a physical equivalent of the bodily limbs and tendons. We're deep in Jewish mysticism, but let's explain this a little bit because I think it's interesting. If you add those numbers together, anyone quick with math? 613, the number of mitzvot. So what he's providing us from the tradition, first of all, is that we're not just physical beings, that we exist in our heart and our mind and our soul, and that just as we have physical abilities in the world, we have spiritual abilities. And as he'll go on to say, each of these limbs, each part of us is imagined to have a particular role in the world. And he's telling us this, of course, because if your legs are designed not to run around giving gossip, but to run to perform a mitzvah, the role of the tongue, of course, is not to castigate others, to tear people down. So we begin to see that who we are and how we use our abilities affects not just our body, not just our society, but the very essence of who we are as a human being. And that's an idea I don't think that we quite touched on in the room, and I think it's an important notion for us to sort of carry with us. We want to learn to speak properly because we are people not only of dignity and self-respect, but that there is some special kernel about the human being, whether you want to call that the soul, your essence, and how we use our essence will impact who we are and everything around us. Our second idea, from this we can all discern the care we must give in performing the commandments as they ensure continued vitality to all of the spiritual body, just as none of us want to suffer the loss of any part of our physical body. In the particular matter of guarding one's tongue, if one permits one's soul to engage in the Lashon Hara, in wicked speech, then of necessity, one won't be able to prevent his ears from hearing Lashon Hara and gossip, nor from accepting those tales. After all, and this is deep, listening will allow one to pass on more gossip later. And he uses commercial language. We buy Lashon Hara in one place so that we can sell it in another. Now, how many of us have had those moments where we are we're curious by nature, but we want to find out the dirt on someone, and then it feels so good to be in the know and get to share it with somebody else? Is that fair? I know I have stumbled in that way. So part of the problem of speech is that it changes what we focus on. If we find and allow ourselves the thrill of, pardon me, talking smack about others, it's going to begin to refocus even how we hear. And we're going to get into this vicious downward cycle that becomes very difficult. And in my opinion, as I've shared here certainly last week, I think we as a country have been on that trajectory for
multiple decades right now, and it's very hard for us to figure our way out of it. That's why we're trying to learn some of these things on there. The final section we'll look, and I'm just going to sum it up because the hour is getting late. The Chofetz Chaim understood something very challenging in human nature. We get habituated rather easily to patterns of action. If we go to the gym every day, it's pretty easy to get up in the morning and go to the gym again. If we miss a few days, it gets a little easier, and before we know it, we've fallen out of the habit. With Lashon Hara and our habits of speech, we get so involved in the ways they are that it's very, very difficult for us to change. And I offer as proof the level of conversation on the national stage that we're seeing. We do not know how to get out of it, and it's a very difficult area for us to do that. And what he will talk about later in the book, and that we will look at periodically over the months to come, are techniques to help us do just that. And in addition to looking at this classical source, we'll be looking at the works of Sherry Turkle, a great expert in how technology changes us and about how conversation itself has become endangered. So we'll be looking at a very classical source and a very modern source. And my goal is that as we move forward, we will be able to figure out for ourselves, who do we at Neve Shalom want to be? What are our conventions? What sort of speech do we want to try to practice? And what sort of community do we imagine that can help us become? Because we are what we do, and what we do becomes more and more habitual. So if we can focus on being the best of ourselves, the noblest of ourselves, then I believe that that downward trajectory of society can change. First, just with ourselves, but a little bit more with our family, with our friends, with our community. And as my mother said, if you smile, the whole world smiles back at you. If we can greet each other and listen deeply and hear them, I believe that can ripple outward over time, changing everything for the better. Shabbat Shalom.